morning. Let's begin this morning with the Vanguard newspaper. Then we'll follow you up with the Daily Sun, right? Okay, so here we go with the Vanguard here that says, 2023, Atiku Tinubu hurl verbal missiles at each other. The writer says, Atiku belongs to a dying breed of ethnic regional politicians. That's Tinubu speaking. Tinubu, greatest threat to national cohesion, democratic norms, Atiku speaking, as Tinubu meets northern leaders today.
Well, those are normal political banters that we expect during this campaign period. Of course, Atiku had made a statement which was widely publicized. It wasn't careful enough, but that does not mean that the other players are different. They probably might not have made the same statement in that kind of a platform that will hit the headline, but not that they will not appeal to their own ethnic sensibilities to curry votes. At the end of the day, whatever you say, Atiku, he must first win the vote with the presidency now. So what Atiku was doing was appealing to his ethnic base.
Yeah.
But Tinubu will do the same, whether in some more sophisticated way, without, especially after what they saw happen with Atiku's speech. Now, the others are going to be more careful about how they appeal to their ethnic base. Obi will do the same.
All of them will do it.
All of them will do it. You know, which is why we shouldn't allow ourselves to be carried away by those things, because they are not really the issues. The issues will be, how will this candidate address the critical matters of state? Let's keep it focused. These are distractions.
Indeed. I'm going to take a Labour Party story now. Peter Obi flags off campaigns October 25. It appears that parties are slowing down in starting their campaign, at least from the major parties.
There were issues with all the frontline parties, at least the major three or four parties. It's either with the campaign council, the list. I didn't make the list. Oh, that won't make the list. Why should leave it there? All those issues were there. Now, as those issues are being ironed out, we will begin to see the campaign take off. But here is my concern about campaign the way it has historically been.
Okay.
Campaigns are one-way communications. So the candidate mounts the podium and it tells you, I will give you power, I will give you water, I will do this, I will do that. It is not rallies and those, they are not engagements. For all the ones that Atiku has done, was there anybody that raised up his hand and say, Oga, how will you deal with flooding in Nigeria? So it's not, they are not engagement. They have their own purpose. Number one, they serve an economic purpose. A lot of money, you know, go into this campaigns.
That's right.
The event management, food distribution of this and that.
The
printers, the media houses, the tailors. So there is an economy.
The whole economy,
Then there is the awareness part of it. It tells people that something is going on. So people are gearing up for what is happening. And in the midst of that, we could get carried away with all these same promises that have been made for decades and have not been taken. So that is why we need those platforms that will be for engagement, where the candidate can sit down and you can have an audience in the room and also open it to a virtual audience wherever they may be.
That's right.
And they can send in questions that will dwell on the critical matters of state, and this candidate can respond to them. That way we can begin to see their understanding of the issues, their thought process, and then the solution they are working with. It will also serve to push those of them who might not have thought through certain issues to go back and think them.
That's
to commission their relevant teams and say, oh boy, the thing where they asked me today, you know, go as opposed to go, what should we do about this? And then the teams will take it up and they will analyze and propound solutions to these issues.
So listen, before campaign started, you know, during the party primaries, the presidential aspirants at that time were going around and they were talking to the media, and, you know, because they wanted to win the ticket from their party. And you know, quite a number of them went around the country. Some of them came here as well. The when campaign started, it reduced because now we know the candidates.
We know the candidates.
Now, the candidates that we know, only one of them, and that is Peter Obi. This is no campaign for him, but he is the only one
who has been consistently
Going to the media, not to the street and be, you know, to the media to answer questions and engage.
Yeah. So we need to now put those kind of platforms. Remember what Lagos Chamber of Commerce tried to do. You put this candidate there. You sit.
I can did the same thing.
Yes. So you are able to engage. It's an engagement. These are the issues of this country. Subsidy, multiple exchange rate.
Begin to talk.
Oh yeah, begin to talk. That is the way to assess their thinking, that they even understand the problems.
Yeah.
It goes beyond just standing up in a rally and say, I will do this, I will do that. Oh, my uncle, then they are bad. I don't vote for them. I'm the only one that can. All those things are stories. They don't mean anything. Absolutely nothing.
Do you think people believe what you're saying, that they don't mean anything? It's almost as though that's how we have come to know campaign to be.
Exactly. That is how we have come. I think NEDG with NESG are trying to put something together now. Yeah. That is a good one. Though that one also, we still need to find a more robust one. Because look at what will happen with the NESG one. I hope they are not going to invite 18 presidential candidates. If you invite 18 and 10 shows up, that is already a crowd. How many hours? How many seconds are they
going to
have?
I was even going to say that. I've spoken with a couple of people that said that, you know, presidential debates are not actually even as effective as
they should be. They're not as effective as they should be. We need a platform. You don't even need to put any other candidate when a particular candidate is presented.
That's right.
Let him sit there. It will also be an opportunity. There are people who have doubts about, oh, this candidate cannot withstand the rigors of the office and all the rest. When you put a man on a seat and engage with him for, say, 2 hours with some, you know, you will know whether this person has the rigors.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, all these, I will do this, I will do that. My opponent are bad. They didn't do that. All these things are stories. These are the same stories been hearing for more than 2 decades, and nothing has changed.
Indeed, and I think there is need to adopt a new method, like Gwolan said. You know, this candidate need to come, you know, to the media to, you know, engage with the electorate. That way, you can measure their capacity to solve the issues that we have. Let's take this last story from the Vanguard this morning. Page 8 says 603 dead, 2 million displaced as flood wreaks havoc in Delta, Bayelsa, Rivers, others. But now this morning, we heard about 2.5 million people have been displaced already. Over 70,000 hectares of farmland swept away. Scary.
It's a disaster. It's something almost equivalent to an earthquake or other natural disaster that you can see in any other part of the world. Over 600 people already dead. And sometimes in Nigeria, not just in Nigeria anyway, some of these figures, you can't even be too sure. It might even be more in reality. I will take this from two perspectives.
Okay.
There is the external issue, some of which are totally out of our control. Then there is the internal one. On the external issue is the fact that there has been massive flooding this year, from Missouri to Florida to Arizona to Kentucky to Germany, from Germany to Pakistan to Australia. There has been major flooding across the entire world. So something is changing. For those who think that this climatic whatever might not be real, it appears that it might be real. After all, some things are changing. The other part that is still external is the fact that when you take Nigeria, the two major rivers into Nigeria, Benue and Niger, did not take their source from Nigeria. They flowed into Nigeria. That means that we do not really control what happens before those rivers come into Nigeria. It is an externality which requires certain high-level management. Now, having said that, now let's come to the internal one. I can remember the names of the dams on the Niger. There's Jeba, there's Kainji, I think there's Shiroro. Can you remember the name of any of the dams on Benue? So apparently The way we have approached the management of our hydrological asset has been lackadaisical. We have put everything in the hand of God. You know, the grace of God will see us through. And in the process, we have abused that grace of God. There has not been investment. In fact, Shiroro, which was the last dam over the Niger, was built, I think, in 1984. So for more than 30 years, for close to 40 years, there has been no major investment in managing our hydrological assets. We just assume that the predictability that we have enjoyed in the past, you can almost tell when the rain will stop. Everything is so predictable with the weather. The farmers know when the Benue or the Niger will go up a little bit, how it will flow, where they will go and they will come back. They know all those things.
They know.
That has changed. But we have not changed, and we are not prepared for the change that has come to us. We have not made those necessary investments over the decades. The investments are not there. If you go to the Middle Belt, I was in North Central last year. What I saw on the Niger was embarrassing. I saw that people were just channeling some of these branches of the Niger into their farm. As they so desire, it didn't appear as if there is a coordinated attempt.
Like whatever they want, however they want. They just do it on their own.
You see, and the river, they flow there, go say, okay, I need water for my farm there. I will just channel them and go carry, that and go my farm. Okay. So we need it now to be deliberate. It is apparent that the predictability of water is no longer as it used to be. The times have changed. We have not made the investment when it was ripe to make it. We now need to look at what are the interventions we can do right now. Interventions to alleviate the pains of the people. Then what are the short-term measures we can take to ensure that if this water comes next year, there will be maybe easy to relocate certain communities, whatever we can do.
Yeah.
Then we must be deliberate about making the necessary investment. Somebody was saying these things are costly. Yes. You see certain countries like the UK spending like $800 million pound or dollars every year in managing their hydrological asset. I say, we may not have $800 million. Maybe for us, maybe it is 80 billion naira. Maybe it is 50 billion naira that we can put into it. Let's start to make those necessary investments. It is not going to get better.
Indeed. You can watch on Facebook. You can also watch on YouTube. Nigeria Info 99.3 is how you can locate us on those two platforms and drop your comment. I will come to take them in a moment. I have this story on page 28 of the Daily Sun. Kanu Igbo lawyer Taku FG accuses Malami of court contempt. It's on page 28 of that paper. Let me just take a sneak peek into it. Then I'll come to Bolaon. So Igbo Lawyers Association, ILA, has advised the federal government to accept the judgment of the appeal court, which discharged an acquitted leader of indigenous people of Biafra, Nnamdi Kanu, from treason charges levied against him. The group said government could not continue to hold on to Kanu without letting him go after the ruling of the appeal court that his extraordinary rendition from Kenya last year and sending him on trial was illegal.
Okay. This is going in a shameful direction, and I think we need to tame it immediately without further delay. There has been engagement about the Kanu matter, attempt to even do political settlement and all the rest. I will leave my own theories about what happened, but I will just focus on the report. The president had said, no, let this thing go through the court process.
That's right.
It has now gone through the court process. What would be the story? What would be the excuse? What would be the issue? Why would you still be holding on to him? If you go through the court process said this man is discharged. So if he's discharged, he needs to be let go. If you now put your act together again and you think it should be back in the court, then you bring him back to the court with the new charges that you have, or amended charge, whatever the case may be. Or if you have appealed to the Supreme Court, the the judgment of the appeal court and you say, oh, okay, I'm going to the Supreme. And the Supreme Court, you now have a case, then you bring him for the for. But at, as it is right now, we're not aware that an appeal has been made, or, you know.
We're not aware.
Mm-hmm. And if the court says this man is discharged, he should be discharged. What are we scared about? That he might disappear again by the time we want him? If he disappears, there are also issues. Because look at what happened now. The court literally said this case has no legs to stand on because of the way you brought this man.
Yeah.
So the lessons will be that if we're going to do this next time, let's go the proper way. There is an extradition process, and there are extradition agreements. Let's pursue it. I don't think that a Kenya will have frustrated our extradition process. Let's go through the courts in Kenya, extradite him properly, and then we can do what we want to do. Then, is this also not an opportunity for a soft landing to activate a political solution? I have never believed that the Kanu kind of case is a 100% legality issue and that legality will 100% address it. I don't think so. I think there's a huge political content with the Kanu issue, and that even if you do legality, you must still come to that political side of things
at some point
to make things, you know, better. So why don't we leverage on this leeway that the court has provided? The court has now said you can't even keep this man, discharge him. So let's use that opportunity to put in the political solution and be able to move on. I understand the position of how can you say somebody has done this, has done that, and you just let him go. But it is the court that said he has no case.
Right. I want to stick with you on that, on the statement, the court now. How do you think the image of the Nigerian judiciary, you know, is with this contract? Because quite a number of people before now seem to think that it's the government. No, it's a government court. You know, the court will always side with the government anyways. But here we are.
It is not the way we castigate the judiciary. I think is an unfair castigation. We don't even understand the kind of work pressure, political pressure, and all kind of pressure that they go through. But this is the same judiciary that asked for Dasuki to be released under this same administration that did not want to release him. It is the same that asked El-Zakzaki to be released, that he has no case, in spite of where the federal government stood on that matter. It is this same judiciary that is also doing the same, a similar thing for Kanu. It had initially quashed 8 of the charges. Now the remaining 7 charges has been sent out and the guy has been asked to let go. So I think it is a wrong approach to castigate the judiciary. It's more or less as if we are undermining that institution when we you know, portray them in those negative terms. I believe that we can continue to support. You listen to the
CJS. Yes,
when we're saying politicians, leave us alone. Let's do our job. It is part of the pressure. And unless you're sitting where they're sitting, you don't even know half of what they're facing right there. And in spite of that, they're still delivering this kind of judgment, which, in my opinion, was based on the law.
Colomi says on YouTube, where we're streaming live, Colomi says something here, and I have to read it. He says, it's Nigeria thing. When judgment favors you,
Say it's good, of course.
You say it's good. And when it doesn't, you say it's typical Nigerians. That's what he's trying to say.
Well, yeah, we see that especially with politicians. If he favors them, if the judgment comes out in their favor, it's, fantastic. If it comes out in the favor of the opponent, then the judge must have been biased.
That's right.
That's undermining the judiciary. It doesn't help any building of institution anywhere.
Talking about politicians, I have this story on page 8 of the Daily Trust. Knox trail closure of broadcast stations by Zamfara government.
I have found this one of the most embarrassing news of recent times. So we have a governor or a state government that has a leadership, and this is 2022. And it appears that the mentality of that government belongs to medieval period. This kind of thinking is probably about 100-year-old kind of thinking. It's rudimentary, it's pedestrian. I cannot believe that a state will say that because media covered the rally of an opposition party, all those media houses should be banned. Where will this kind of leader lead the people? Is it surprising then that Zamfara is the way it is?
If
this is the kind of leader that he has.
That's a valid question.
Yes. He should tell everybody, why about Zamfara? It's the way it is. If the leaders of that place thinks that would think that you can't have an opposition hold a rally, and anybody that goes there should be arrested or the media houses should be banned. It is the most ridiculous news. And I hope that apart from reversing this process, that the governor will apologize for that kind of a 1900 behavior.
Do you think this is typical of an average Nigerian politician? We've heard Nigerian politicians, you know, that have shut down opposition's businesses, destroyed houses belonging to opposition, you know, put up some flimby reasons why, you know, one government or former ex-governor should be stripped of title or another, you know, all kinds of things that politicians... Is this typical of our brand of politics?
I think because they are not challenged most of the times when they do these things. Mm. We've seen... I remember even a president that asked for newspapers that are already on the street.
Yeah.
To go after those newspapers and start taking them from the newsstand all over the place. And the security agents went all over Abuja and Lagos and started impounding those copies of newspapers.
Oh, my.
You know, and this was under the same democracy that we're talking about. So the tendency is there. It is for people to continue to resist and speak vehemently against such attitude. And where there are where there are opportunities for legal action, please, by all means, we must take it. And get some legal reprieve. Mm. It's absolutely unacceptable. Imagine what the Rivers State governor did last week. Mm. You know, it was the same governor who decided to give all the recognition to this same man, because the previous guy did not recognize him. He gave all the recognition, and because he said the guy is aligning with
the same party,
but you are aligning with my enemy, therefore I must punish you. The kind of power, do you listen to some of these governors when they talk about the state money?
Right.
I did, is it your money? Even sometimes when they say, I was the one that was, sponsoring the party, you cut your personal check to sponsor the party. This is state money. But they get into this position of power that they cannot even separate the state from themselves. That's why somebody will wake up and say, ban all those media houses. Some of those media houses belong to the federal government too.
Mm-hmm.
Say ban them because they covered an event by opposition. That's a 1900 man. It shouldn't. Anyway,
it shouldn't be here. Let's take our last story. And this one is from Daily Independent. Legal tussle looms over Lagos Lekki Epe International Airport project.
Who is going to the court for that?
Yeah.
I don't know why there are. What is the charge of this?
The project,
legal, the legal issue. Oh, of course, I know the Lekki Epe, the airport, right?
Yeah, the airport. Yes,
the airport project. It is not just airport project that is going on at the Lekki Epe axis. There are several other things. There is a free trade zone, there is a Dangote refinery, there are several things that are going on
happening
there. Of course, Lagos, we must appreciate the fact that Lagos has a serious constraint expanding or developing from the other segments. It cannot go to Isheri and do most of these things. It's right beside Ogun State there. So Lagos is constrained, and most of the opportunities to expand and do some things lie on this axis, which might be what is driving those projects. But the problem is that the leadership must look at those projects holistically from the perspective of the level of activities that will be created there, vis-a-vis the existing infrastructure at that axis.
Because I was going to say that it's almost as if, because the problem that people have seen is that Lagos government seem to be looking at development in isolation. So when there is new development somewhere, they just do that in isolation. They don't look at the surrounding infrastructure and how this would affect them and what they need to do to mitigate the impact of the new development.
And start to plan that infrastructure expansion along with those major projects. Along. Otherwise, the impact on the people, on the communities, will now defeat some of the gains of that project. In fact, we might need to start now rework some of those projects because we didn't put that. I'm not saying they didn't put it to, maybe it is not communicated.
Yeah.
But definitely, the increased activity will put pressure on existing infrastructure.
Right.
There must be a plan for infrastructure expansion to accommodate those levels of projects. Mm. Otherwise, the people are going to be in trouble.
Well, Olojade, thank you so much for joining me on that day today.
The pleasure is mine.
We'll be back here tomorrow at 7:30. Join us again. I'm Sheriff Quadri. We're going to take a break now. When we return from the break, we'll have the news for you at the top of the hour, after which, of course, we'll talk the planned release of prisoners, 30% of them, across prisons across the country. Jokel Adesomi is Executive Director of Prisoners Rehabilitation. She'll be joining me on the show this morning. I will talk extensively on this. Stay here, Lagos. I'll be right back.
Listen to this to understand the amazing power of 5G.
And I want to assume that you would run, because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running late to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire those that need to be fired, get fired.
It's looking like a brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. And what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean by that. I'm not a